Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That's my pleasure. And yeah, it's awesome. Woohoo, here he is. So I got your email on the weekend, and it was one of those moments you're like, I'm going to take a second here just to read it. If I'm honest, I didn't even know that I was necessarily part of it. Maybe you haven't sent much out. I'm not sure. But it really caught my attention. And so where I'd love to start is there. And like, what sparked the inspiration to send that newsletter out into the world? And run us through, you know, what you were talking about.
All right. Well, the newsletter itself was just something that I'd been working through myself, really, and kind of had a little breakthrough, and I don't know, just felt worthy of being shared with people, you know, and more even so, more just that, like, it's just that writing as catharsis, you know, like writing as my own expression and understanding my own thoughts. And it was just kind of the nature that I was like, you know what, this is something that might be beneficial to other people. So I just kind of, because obviously there's a stack of writing that I do that's just not for that. But this just kind of felt like something that there was a universal nature to it. And so, yeah, I'd been kind of, I don't know, growing over a number of months, just feeling stuck in life. Generally, really just kind of feeling stuck in business, feeling stuck at home, feeling stuck and to the point of frustration and just like, oh, like, what are we doing? Like, you know, we've got a clinic here that we love the community that we are serving, and we are, you know, right at the moment in the last few months, Byron Bay being what it is, it's a very kind of transient and up and down market, but there's something's just kind of switched over the last few months, and it's been, for various different reasons, it's been like absolutely gangbusters and it's been doing absolutely brilliantly. So I was like, you know, we've been thinking like, all right, what do we do to kind of keep this momentum rolling and like make sure that we don't kind of lose it and drop off? And all of these sorts of thoughts and pressures had been running through my mind for a number of months. And I got to the point where I kind of looked at like down the road of like the clinic and our current kind of circumstances. Like, look, even if we absolutely continue to slay it at our current rate in Byron Bay, the best that we can hope for as two incredibly well-trained health practitioners, doctors, is to like buy this industrial unit that we might be able to then live in and work out of. And it's just like, man, like, we've either got like, the Byron's one of those places, you've either got to go big or you got to go home. Like, if you want to kind of hang around, there's a level of like, you're all in, you know? And so I was just like, what's my all in? Like, what does all in look like to me as far as like being in Byron and being really committed to this area, which I love, and I can't imagine myself being anywhere else. Like, what do I need to do? Like, what's the dream? What's the dream? And so that email was essentially that kind of end result of me realizing that frustration with work and with, not even so much with work, but like the outlook of work. It's like, where is this leading to? You know, like, yes, I'm doing well, we're doing great, but where's it going? Yeah, like, and, you know, like, I'm a health practitioner. What is it all? It's not even that. Like, I was having a conversation this evening with, like, a lady who does, like, event planning for, like, and we're talking, like, five-star boutique kind of, like, you know, the top 1% kind of, like, people in the world enjoy these kind of experience. And she's an experience director. Like, she gets hired by wellness retreats or by cruise liners or super yachts to design experiences. Like, that's her thing. And she's like, you know, but what am I doing it for? You know, like, what's my why? And it's like, we're like polar opposites apart in like profession, right? And I'm like a practitioner that's like, you know, for most people would look at what I do and be like, man, your why is like just so clear. You're like hands on with people every day, just helping them heal. And it's like, well, yes, but, and I'm not, oh, I don't want to sound like ungrateful. I love my job, but I also know that there is more for me to do. And, you know, I could be satisfied with just this. And I am, and I'm not, you know? Like, I love my life. And that's the other thing is, like, I've come to this point, like, we've created this point at which we're at. And yes, it's frustrating. Yes, we kind of feel stuck, but it's like, we created this. Like, and if we want out, we've got to, this is our life by design. We've designed it. This is where we're at. You know, like, I had a really good quote the other day. We can choose our actions, but we can't choose our consequences, right? We've chosen the actions that have brought us to this point, and I wouldn't change any of them, you know, like, so we are where we're meant to be. The frustration, you know, I was taking it. I don't know. Like, when you've got something inside of you that you're like, I can't figure out what that is. The first place we look is outside of ourselves. I was getting frustrated with the home, with the environment at home, with like furniture and stuff. I was like trying to move stuff around, being like, don't get me, like, you name it. I was like, there's something, but it's just inside. It was just inside. It was just me. I'd stopped dreaming. And so there, yeah, it was that point of like, well, then what's my dream? Like, what do I want that to be? Sorry, we've come a long way very rapidly. Have I ducked over?
No. It's perfect.
So I had, you know, all of this deep frustration that had been building and building and building. And I realized that it was a stifling that I had self-imposed because I'd got so busy focusing on making the most of what we had now that I'd stopped looking at what could be ahead and the possibilities of that. And it wasn't that what we have now isn't good. It's not that it's not great. It's not that I don't love it. It's just that I still feel like there's more to be achieved and more to be done beyond just the one-on-one service of clinic.
And so for any audience member listening, so Regan is a chiropractor and he's brilliant. And I've been to him many times since I moved to Byron with his wife, Megan. They run a practice together. And this article, it was titled The Lost Art of Dreaming. And the subtitle, A Moment of Quiet Reflection for Finding the Horizon. And I think what resonated so much for me was this idea of like, we just get caught in the grind. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I've got to do this. And the to-do list is like sometimes always just growing. And where's your time gone? Suddenly you're like, hang on, what's actually going on here?
And it's not even that, right? There's nothing wrong with anything that's on the list. Everything that's on that list is like, you know, I like this. I appreciate it. I know what it's doing and it serves a great purpose. But yeah, it's more just that like I've had my head stuck down. You know, I've been looking down at the list and the do-to-dos, the day-to-days, and you just lose inspiration. You lose the expansive nature of, the horizon and looking at what could be. And it's not, you know, like, I don't know, am I going to be 80 years old and looking at what could be? I hope so, you know, but like, yeah.
I hope so too. Absolutely. 80 is going to happen to both of us at some point. And
that's it.
What an exciting time that will be when we get there. Where I'd like to go now then, Regan, is so what is it that you're most excited about working on at the moment?
So at the moment, I'm finishing up writing a book. And the book is a shift. It marks a shift, I think, in it's that generational itch. You know, it's like what worked and what satisfied the previous generation isn't there. It doesn't land for us anymore, and it's not going to land for the next generation. And, you know, the previous generation of practitioners have wanted hard data. They've wanted facts. They've wanted to know the percentages, and they've wanted to work with certainty and just kind of like, yeah, we can get this done and we can. And I'm like, that's, I get that. And that's kind of the vast majority of where health practitioners have to work and have to work from, and they need that information. But it's also, again, like, what's the horizon? What are we working towards? And like, how do we change what we do now to get to that horizon. Because the fact is that, like, we haven't changed. The vast majority of health practitioners and health professions are doing the same modalities or slight variations of that we've done for the last 100 years. But my issue isn't so much with that. It's the explanation of why, right? Like, because if we can't answer why we've been stuck doing something one way, how do we expect to break our mold of that? You know, we're just going to kind of keep playing it over and over. And so the book is more of a philosophical expose of our shortcomings in health sciences. And awesome. So then the dream is to, and what I'm excited about is, like, how do we shift the needle? And, you know, I'm a big dreamer. And like I said, I was just chatting with this lady who is an experience coordinator director, and maybe that's not by chance, you know, perchance that I've just had that conversation with her before coming here to talk with you, but you know, the dream that we had a couple of years ago and that kind of reinvigorated itself and within me at the moment is like a Heal the Healer style retreat center where we can work with practitioners who they need their own space and downtime. And there's something obviously incredibly unique about spending time with people of your own profession who have shared burdens similar to your own and responsibilities similar to your own. There's something very liberating about that. And so creating a space where practitioners can come and just, like, let go of that, or not let go, but just temporarily for a season of period of time, just put aside that, like, I'm a certain practitioner, doctor, I know what I need to do, and be patient, be the receiver. Because, you know, my dad's a chiropractor and he's an amazing practitioner, and I'm so incredibly thankful for the opportunities and the work and the things that he has done for me and for my brother and sister, and the foundation that he has set for our family. But I also know that Dad never really probably got the opportunity to have as much work done on himself as he would have liked to and probably needed to. I don't know. How do you quantify that? But, you know, it's like, yeah, so setting up some form of retreat center where we can start to explore these new philosophies and ideas and techniques, and practitioners can come and experience them and really kind of dive into their own healing as well as a part of that, I think might be a really cool step forward for the health sciences and the future generations of practitioners, because it's the dropout of health practitioners post uni, whether you're in, you know, medicine or allied or alternative, is very high. For our younger generation, is that they don't have that why. You know, we've been taught all the data, we've been taught all the information, but it's like, well, why are we doing it? What's the driving force in and behind this?
To scale your skills and knowledge, the idea of a Healing the Healers retreat or space, or however you might productize that, is very cool, because that's the way to actually get the better knowledge out in the marketplace to drive results. And maybe you don't need data-driven in the same way that you were describing, but actually just how do people feel? And creating a cohort, perhaps, of people each year or every 6 months that come and upgrade and upskill, that then go out in the world and reapply that to their existing customer base. I mean, that's an epic thing to do with your time. Like, how cool is that? I completely agree. What we could do, and I'd be intrigued, is to talk a bit about the problem here. So why is it that young practitioners drop out of the industry? And why is it that you feel that healers are just going through the motions in the same way they have done for 100 years? Like, What have you seen that's made you kind of get to that point?
I'm going to speak mainly to chiropractic and chiropractors because, you know, that's
your field,
the world that I know. And obviously, like for the book, I've done some, like, obviously I've done a fair bit of research into physiotherapy and osteopathy. Mm-hmm. But they're still not, you know, that's not my hometown. Chiropractic, why the high dropout rate? Well, the universities, let me see if I can find this quote. To honor our tradition is not to preserve it unchanged, but to deepen it through scrutiny. Chiropractic has not changed, really, for the last 100, or especially the last at least kind of 70 years. The vast majority, there's like one or two techniques that are doing something like actually different. But the vast majority of them are just kind of like, how can we include new technology into what we're already doing? You know, we just assume that our hands-on application of what we're doing is the best that it can be, and that we've answered all of the possible answers that could be answered with those kind of hands-on technique. And now it's just a matter of what can technology add to that. And I think a lot of chiropractors, younger chiropractors, kind of like they get out into the profession and they see these successful practitioners that they're working for, and they're getting low back surgeries, they're getting fusions, they're, you know, there's a whole range of reasons as to, you know, like they're coming out and they're saying, well, like, I don't think this is actually achieving everything that we said it would. Because you asked, like, why are so many practitioners dropping out? And so I'm going to answer the chiropractic side of things because that's the one that I have experience with. Obviously what we're taught in university is a very philosophically diluted, if probably just non-existent. Like most chiropractors now, they go to uni and they learn the techniques and they learn that bones move little bits here and there, and that if you move those bones, it affects the nerves, which infects the control of everything else through the body, et cetera, et cetera. But like, that's not where chiropractic started. Like chiropractic started this as this, like, you know, there's this magical power in the body that's been imbued by some creative force in the galaxy. And if we can unlock a little bit of that by maneuvering and shifting the position and the input of nerves through the joints, then we can unlock this like healing potential that all of the universe has that is in within the body. But like, none of that's discussed in uni. Like, no, it's just like this very kind of whitewashed, we move bones, that shifts nerve, or, you know, changes nerve signals and inputs. And so we've lost this kind of sense of wonder and awe. And then you pair that with, yeah, they're coming out into the profession and they're seeing chiropractors that may have, actually, it doesn't really matter whether or not they have very strong philosophical roots themselves or not, right? They come out into the professional world and they're working for these old experienced chiropractors who have had disc surgeries and low back fusions and all of these different things. And you're like, if you've been adjusted like every day of your life and you've followed all the rehab and you've done your breath work and you've done your organic living that you've, you know, been able to afford to do because you've worked really hard and that's paid off really well, like, why is this, you know, that's kind of like, well, why are we still needing surgery? Like, if the power that made the body heals the body, which is the founding principle of kind of chiropractic, and you've been unlocking that potential in your body once or twice a week with regular adjustments since you were X number of years old, why are you needing this spinal surgery? Like, that doesn't. And so I think there's just kind of like, yeah, this generation, my generation, probably the generation, I don't know, but I just wanted to know, like, why? What are we missing? Like, I'm not happy with that, you know? And some, call it old age, call it what you want, I don't care. Like, but I'm not happy with being like, I think the power, like the body does have an incredible power to heal. And I think we haven't tapped the edge of it.
Epic.
It's like, so then what are we doing wrong? What are we still doing wrong? And if we can create space to admit that uncertainty, what comes next?
And so, Regan, one of the reasons I love podcasting is I genuinely feel people's power and passion coming through. So I'd love to riff on that. You just described the kind of founding principle of chiropractics. What is that? And why have we not even touched the sides?
What is that? The power that made the body heals the body. So that is a quote from, so the chiropractic was created by D.D. Palmer back in 1896.
Whatever. 18 yeah,
somewhere close to that. So let's go through it, right? So physiotherapy came first, right? That was like someone looked at the muscles on the outside of the body and we thought if we can get these muscles moving freely and better and coordinating better, we will facilitate healing and the body and the person will improve and be better. Yeah. And if you looked in that kind of quantum mechanics, quantum physics study where they talked about how like the New Yorkers, I'm not sure if it's a New Yorker, but there's like a weekly kind of puzzle that like it's really difficult and it goes out each weekend in, I don't know if it's a New Yorker or something like that. But like for no specific reason that they can figure out, people that attempt that quiz or that crossword or whatever it is at the end of the weekend with no prior connection to anyone else that's done it will achieve it faster than people that did it at the start of the weekend, right? Because there's this collective kind of consciousness that's like, this has been done.
Yeah, we're all one.
Yeah, so it's not like, anyway, so physiotherapy kind of came first. That was like the first modality that entered our world as an organized thing. And then osteopathy kind of came next, right? It looked a little bit deeper and it was like, yeah, there's muscles doing this, but look at this stuff around the muscles. Like that's weird kind of fascia, right? And then they looked at the fascia and the blood vessels. And then D.D. Palmer, who was a chiro, who I believe he'd had some form of influence and training from osteopathy. That's people argue about the details of that. I don't really care. Kind of looked a little bit deeper again. He said, all right, yeah, but beneath those muscles and beneath those fascia, there's this like bone structure that's like hardwired into like the electrical systems of your body. Like you can't, you know. And so he had a patient come in to his office who he was working, and D.D. Palmer himself was like more of this like energetic kind of woo-woo pretty kind of guy, right, at the time. But he had a patient come in who said, oh, I heard this click in my back yesterday and now today I've woken up and I can't hear out of my ear. And so D.D. in his, and this is the story, how true it is or accurate, people again argue over that. Not the point of the story, but D.D. adjusts this man's spine and his hearing comes back, right? And this is the birthplace of chiropractic. And so then D.D. and his son BJ kind of formalized the profession and created its supposedly non-Masonic 33 principles of chiropractic, which the founding one is, yes, the power that made the body heals the body. And so that's an... it's an a plight of universal, not the plight, it's the, they talk about innate intelligence. So the innate intelligence that we have within each one of us is an expression and a fragmented capture of this universal innate intelligence that we all kind of have within us. And anywhere that you look in nature, you can see that there is an ability to heal. Right. And so us as a part of that, we also have this capacity to heal. And so how, you know, the power that made the body heals the body. This is something that's been imbued into all of creation, all living things. How do we, you know, how do we access that?
And well, one of the things I love about speaking with people like yourself is I've spent a huge amount of my time in the more like business oriented kind of wealth world. But like, what's the point of being wealthy if you're not healthy? And I do like the phrase, you know, your health is your wealth. Because if you're healthy of mind and healthy of body, then you can create all sorts of wealth.
Yeah.
Instinctively, where are you taken when you think like, okay, well, perhaps we haven't even scratched the surface of possibility.
Mm.
It's like, what? How do you explore that? I mean, you have your hands on people every day, treating them, right? Yes. That's the engine room of what you do.
Yeah.
But as you said, you were a bit kind of stuck in it and you needed to zoom out a bit. Presumably you're learning things every day about what works and what doesn't work. But yes, how do you explore that intuitive kind of question you've got there?
The hardest part of this is that there's just so many I don't knows, and being okay with that. And the fact that like this, the whole goal of this line of questioning for me is like, this is just the beginning. Like, I just want to ask a question. I just want to like explore a possibility in the vain hope that like somewhere down the line in the next couple of generations, I don't know, technology's moving fast. I'm sure we can figure some things out faster than that, but right, we can change the trajectory of human experience and a life well lived. And so you look, so where does that come from? So it actually, a lot of it starts in the leaps and bounds that have been made in psychological and emotional sciences and therapies, and that we talk about having to shift, like change the environment, like changing environments, right? And even gut, you know, and these principles of like, let's go like mental, sorry. So let's like look at them like a mental healing scenario. What is it that we need to create a mentally kind of healing scenario? Right? You know, it's one that's stable, right? What's stable? Well, often to our mind, it's scenarios that bring us back to that core, deepest, truest expression of ourselves, you know? And if you look at the, you know, the a lot of research that's been doing around going on around gut healing and optimization, it's like, well, what is the core food groups that like we really like just absolutely have to have to, you know, survive? What are those stable food groups that like, man, humans, if they don't have these, are gonna like, and you know, obviously the human body's brilliant. Like you could not have those things for 2 years, 3 years, 15, 20 years. But like you start to really play this out and there's no version of this where you leave it for a long period of time and it comes back better than it was. You know what I mean? Like, so if like, and do you mind if I stir the pot and...
Go for it.
Okay, so vegetarians. I'm just going to dig straight in on vegetarians. Right, so I've treated second, third generation vegetarians. It does not end well. There's no good outcome of that. Right? Like short term, one generation, they might be like, they might be able to adapt around and make it work. You know, they've got stores of different vitamins. Their genetics may suit better. But you play that out over two, three generations and you're going to start to see teeth crumbling out of people's mouths. You're going to start seeing malformation in jaw structure. You're going to see all sorts of different kind of... So it's not these things can't be done. It's not that they can't serve a purpose. It's not that we shouldn't do them. It's just that in the long term, there's still something like a stable fundamental aspect of diet that's missing, and that is protein, right? And the things that come along with that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's like, well, in the body, what is a stable environment? You know, like not just what is balanced. Again, we can balance a vegetarian diet. We can give you some like proteins. We can, right? But it's not the same. It's just not the same, right? It's not the same as giving someone red meat to eat, right? And so when we look at a stable body, it's a very different, it's a fundamental different concept to just a balanced body. And this is kind of the crux of the book, is that we have, and health sciences has been driven into this homeostasis. What is balance? How do we achieve balance? How do we restore balance? And it's like, well, balance is actually the byproduct of, it's like happiness, you know, like the more that you pursue happiness of its own accord and just like, I just want happiness, the harder it is to grasp and get a hold of, right? Balance is the same. It's like, if you've got a super unstable body and you're trying to find balance, sometimes the best thing that you can do is give that bike a push, right? Those people are riding around on a unicycle or two wheels and like they need to get out of symptoms. What's the best thing to do? Give them a push. They can maintain control better. They can breathe easier, right? If you're on a bike, the hardest thing to do sometimes is to go at a snail's pace with no feet on the ground, right?
Mm.
And so we have unintentionally by design of society and culture and the pharmaceutical industries, we have pursued balance to the nth degree. We have achieved it in so many wonderful ways that will serve us long into the future. But balance comes at a cost. It's a performance. It's a exhaustive, energy draining.
Is what comes to mind. Yeah, interesting.
And so, and then, but then you look at it in your world, right? In like the financial world, we can keep printing money, right? That'll maintain balance, but everyone's like just waiting for that fucker to fall, you know? Like, it's not a sustainable.
It's a complete facade. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like we keep making muscles bigger, and you're like, great, you're stronger. What, how's the rest of your function? Like, are you smarter? Mm-hmm. Like, can you sleep better? Are you breathing better? Like, you're just stronger. That doesn't mean jack.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you're eating well, great. Or like we focus on these individual like little mechanisms of like, you know, they're each a version of happiness, whatever's making you happy. I want to focus on my strength. I want to focus on my flexibility. And it's like, look at that 9-year-old kid. Okay, 9-year-old's not a great idea for strength because their strength isn't a capacity for that thing. But like they didn't have to try to be flexible. They didn't have to try to be like have good squat motion or walking technique. Most of them back in the day didn't even have to be taught how to breathe through their nose, right? This was a natural function of just like good structural stability that had good integrity. There we go. That's the word I'm looking for.
And Regan, I'm intrigued about this idea of balance because it's a really interesting lens that you can kind of point in lots of directions. So, and to your point, like, you know, in the world of finance and money and investing, there are people out there that will be selling stuff that it's just not true, right? Mm-hmm. When you dig underneath the hood, you're like, well, hang on a second. This might be an equity, but this is an airline. It's not a mining company or whatever the case might be. Without going down that too long, so where did you come across this concept of balance?
Well, yeah, so because like I said, my dad is a chiropractor and he is a master, absolute master, and that's more of like my own colloquial, he's a certified practitioner for a technique called neuroemotional technique, and it is a groundbreaking, incredible technique that has changed my life numerous ways over many years since I was about 10 years old. And it was always a part of Dad's practice that just, even when I was, 10 years old and receiving it, it just always landed differently. You know, just always hit a spot, scratched an itch that just, you know, hadn't been accessed. And so that had kind of set a precursor. And through university, whilst studying chiropractic, I had, and obviously, you know, mum and dad, my mother and father ran the NET seminars in Australia for about 17 years. And so I'd been in and around the community. I'd been running around the seminars when I could, since I was knee high to a grasshopper, you know, and so when I was at uni and as soon as I could, I was like straight in on those seminars and absorbing that kind of information to a deeper level and looking at the principles of like, of NET, because one of the things that Dr. Scott Walker, the founder of NET, did brilliantly well that a lot of alternative and allied health techniques don't do is that as soon as he created that technique, he created a research foundation. Because he's like, this is weird and wild and cool, but people are going to like absolutely harass me about the veracity and the quality of this work. So he created a research foundation. And I don't know, along the way, you know, obviously as that grew and progressed and his thoughts progressed along that, the different principles that kind of got outlined and the axioms that were applied, just they started to set a really interesting scene in my brain. And then in my final year of university, I was doing placement at a clinic up at Sunshine Coast with a like absolute legend, and I mean that in just about all manner. He's not dead, but he's like an older generation practitioner that has maintained a high level of respect within the community and as a professional and as a business leader and as a thought leader as well, Dr. Mark Possels. And I was at his clinic for 4 weeks as part of my placement, and they were using this new technique there called advanced biostructural correction. And he said, this is, he's like, why don't you give it a go? You're here for 4 weeks. What's the worst that could happen? And I'd seen this technique being done, and I just thought, yeah, I don't know. It looks like I'd seen it done before, and I was like, it looks really weird. I don't know if I'm not really that interested. But the guy was like, he was just like, look, worst thing that happens, you go back to your dad and he fixes you like when you're done here. And I was like, oh yeah, that's fair enough. All right. So for 4 weeks, twice a week, I went in and I got adjusted whilst I was doing my observations and the various other roles that they had me doing there. And I saw such a profound change and improvement in my own body that just made me question everything. Because it's like, I have received world-class chiropractic care since I was 10 years old. Like most weeks, at least, you know, if not every other day, I'd ask dad for a little, this feels off and out and this isn't super comfy. Can you do something? And I just thought, if all of this improvement was open and available to me, and I've been having all of this regular care, I've done PT and physio and rehab post knee reconstructions, I've had, you know, all through uni I had weekly Chinese acupuncture and herbs because it was free and I was a broke student and it was fantastic and I flippin' love Chinese medicine. But like, what, like, why was all of this improvement possible in such a short amount of time? And it was, so after that 4 weeks, it was the first time in my life that I can remember that I went longer than, I think the next time I got adjusted after that was probably about 6 to 8 weeks, which is the longest I think I've ever gone in my life without getting some form of chiropractic adjustment. And it held, and I felt great. And I just thought, why? Like, what's fundamentally different? And so I went to the seminar for this technique, and essentially they didn't quite put it in this frame of view. They use different describers. But essentially, they're like, there's two different kind of changes in your body. There's the change that happens in your body because it's traumatic and your body can't do anything, like can't directly fix and or heal it for itself. And then there's all the changes that your body creates around those. And those are intelligent compensations and adaptations that we have been messing around with for the last 150 years, and we have made a very good sport of it, and it's had some profound impacts. But yeah, we've essentially, and that, I don't know where the stability came from. I honestly could not tell you at which point that dropped into my brain. I think it was most likely from the NET seminar, and it's like, you know, we want to see, someone probably would have said, just set up on stage, we want to see that stable change in that person's nervous system. You know, we want to see the breath soften and open and the person just immediately kind of pop up and stand a little bit taller when you see that emotional release and repatterning in the nervous system. And I was like, stable, like, you know, it's going to be some minuscule kind of like lead in like that. There wasn't any kind of like specific, someone said it, but it just kind of clicked. I'm like, oh, we've been helping people balance. Like, and we've gotten really flipping good at it. And, you know, there's like, don't get me wrong, there's times and places and scenarios where that is the best answer that you could possibly hope for. And that's the right place and that's the right thing for the right job. But it's not healing. It's adaptation. It's performance. It's a cost. It's a carried cost. It's a continued cost. The longer that you maintain balance, the higher the cost becomes.
And to use another financial term, it's like it's a compounding misallocation of capital. And it might be small, but over time it grows until eventually, I assume,
yeah,
it becomes disease and it's inflammation on a scale that the body can't handle. Would that be fair to say?
So, like, one of my things is like, okay, so
if you chase balance, without focusing on stability? Why does that take you?
Yeah. Yeah, it leads you to, because that's the thing, like, because of the way our nervous system, we know what we know and we like what we know, and what we know necessarily isn't necessarily good for us, you know, and what we're comfortable with isn't necessarily good for us. But because it's comfortable, we keep going there. And so when the cost, you know, when they come knocking on your door and it's like, it's time to pay, that's like, that cost is significantly higher than, like, that interest compounds. It is not a favorable long-term outcome. My thought process and the way that I kind of, to the best of my ability, there's going to be holes everywhere, but to the best of my ability, when I'm challenging and testing my own thoughts and ideas, it's like, there's this universal principle of as above, so below, right? As far as, like, if we can see this at one level of existence, for it to be a universal truth, we must be able to see it at different levels, right? And so we've talked about the financial, but you can see it as well in, like, environmental, right? People introduce animal species, and we all know how well that plays out, right? When we try to outsmart nature, like, it just does it. We keep, you know, and then we're like, oh no, now we need to introduce another species. Oh no, we need to introduce this pest and this tick and this flower. And, you know, like, it just, you're constantly on the back foot.
It's like a dynamic between the free market and intervention. When the free market is nature and stability, and intervention is government rules or inputting, you know, like in the UK, we used to have red squirrels, and these grey squirrels turned up and then they just took over, you know, just as one random example I can think of. But And so to come full circle then, Regan, do you think that your healers concept that you're thinking about, you know, jumping on and actually doing would really be a focus on stability and kind of coaching healers to think about stability as the kind of core focus? And maybe that's already too much. Is that your core focus when you have a treatment with someone, to focus on stability?
Yes. Yeah. You know, stability is the environment of healing, right? It's the place where you mentally, emotionally, or physically go, oh, I can let go. I feel safe, right? I don't have to be exerting myself to a point of, and it's not to, you know, we're living beings. There's so many different nuances to this. It's insane. But as a rule, like, a stable environment is one that facilitates healing. Now, that means that a stable environment, it might still be painful. A stable environment might still have many other symptoms going on for that layer. You know, there's layers and there's patterns and there's tensions. And it's like, well, this is as stable as we can get you at this moment. And then I've got to, you know, your body has to now, because, you know, like, I'm not doing the healing. I'm just creating the environment that facilitates that, right? So I often tell my patients, I'm like, you can leave here and you might feel better. You might feel worse. You might feel exactly the same. I don't know, right? There is too many layers. There's too many adaptive possibilities as to how your body has responded to these things and how it's going to play out. But I can honestly tell you that if we continue to pursue stability as our core goal, the things that we could achieve are inspirationally unknown.
Really cool.
But it's human, you know, like, it's this thing that, like, yeah, even saying it now, though, it's like, it's this thing that, like, it sounds, it's, there's a poetic nature to it that's amazing. And then you actually get into it in clinic and it's messy and it's not straightforward and it's often frustrating. And it's like, this isn't playing out how I thought it would. And it's like, well, that's
yes, life.
I know. And it's like, I don't know exactly, you know. And so that's kind of like the purpose of the Heal the Healer as well. It's like, how can we work to, like, you know, bringing other people into this and getting them to, okay, like, start to experience that, what it feels like to be stable rather than just balanced, having other practitioners experience that and then take that home and be like, all right, so, like, then how do I adjudicate that? How do I, you know, what, can I, with, because like I, the techniques that I use, they're a step, I believe they're a big step forward in the right direction. Are they the end result? No. No, in 20, 30, like even so, I've been doing the ABC technique, which is probably the most groundbreaking physical intervention I've come across in the last 10 years, 15 years. And in the last 8 years that I've experienced it and worked with it, it's already changed so much. Like the way that they've tweaked and evolved the technique, which is one of the reasons why I love it. Like they're not just sitting back being like, oh, yeah, no, this is what we created. It's done. You know, they're continuing to improve upon the technique, and everyone that's been doing it for a long time is very thankful for that because it was pretty wild when it started. Mm. Yeah. So it's like, how do we, as stability as the goal, as the foundational pursuit, can we explore other avenues that might get us to that point as well? And, or, yeah. Does that?
Yeah, no, it's awesome.
Makes sense.
How would you do that? It's basically, I would assume it's iteration, it's experimentation. Like if I was thinking about how a business might grow or a product might develop, it's, you basically got to test it and you got to try it on people and you got to test it again. You got to try something different. And
yeah,
somewhere along the line, you hit, you know, quote unquote, product market fit and the whole thing just takes off. And I think it probably applies to this, right? Because yeah, it's ultimately chiropractic is non-invasive. You have to be in a room with a practitioner to receive treatment, but you know you're not taking drugs, and you're basically directing almost like a conductor of an orchestra, a body to heal itself. I guess you just have to try new things, right, to see what works.
Yes. Yeah. But I think this is one of the things that I'm working on as an alongside for the book. And that is, it's almost done, getting there. It's an online course that essentially, like, there are, like, when we're looking at the physical structure of your body, there are things that should be achieved and maintained as an indicators of level of stability or like level of overall stability, you know? So a body in a relaxed posture, relaxed is a really important word there. Like I don't want to, you know, people send me photos of them like standing up straight. And I'm like, no, I don't want to see you standing up straight. I want to see like, where do you relax to? Like if you just breathe in, breathe out, let your body slump, where does it go? Where does it fall to? Not only that, like how effortlessly do you take that full breath in before you let it out? And like when you let it out, does the body sway back and forth? Like there are markers and things that we can observe that give us an overall indicator for the stability of the body. And so whilst ABC is an technique that gets us closer to that than anything else I've come across, it's more about kind of, all right, so, you know, here are the things that we're looking for. This is the things, like when you're treating and adjusting people and you're experimenting with like, how is this going to impact on this person's stability? This is what you need to look for. Because often like we see these, I'm not going to name names, but we see photos put up on social media of postural improvements. And let's just start there for a second, quick sidetrack. Our postural normal ranges are absolute rubbish. It's like blood, it's like functional blood work being within normal ranges. It means absolutely nothing. It's beyond useless. The amount of dysfunction in your spine that can be carried within normal limits is just ridiculous. But, right, we see these before and after photos on Instagram of like postural changes. And don't get me wrong, not all of the ones that I've posted up on, you know, looking back on them as I've grown as a practitioner, I'm like, oh, that actually wasn't as good as I thought it was. Right. But we post up these photos of before and afters and we're looking at postural improvement and we're looking at just the spine. Or we're looking at just the face, or we're like, sorry, just the neck, or just the face, or just the low back. And it's like, tell me in what part of your daily life does just your low back work on its own without any other interaction from any other part of your body. Never. Like, it just doesn't. We keep trying to break things down. And this is the downstream effect of science as it has been for many years. We keep looking at these kind of individual functions and aspects or areas being like, if we can just restore that area. The problem that we have, right, is it's like, not the problem. It's just, it's so short-sighted. And it's very much a downstream effect of just that data-driven body as individual parts world. You know, we keep looking at these like independent kind of areas or issues or regions of the body or symptoms of the body, and we focus on improvement on just one. But the problem is that if we just look at low back shape, you know, we could be improving low back at the cost of the neck. You know, like these things, it's like pushing mashed potato around on the plate. You know, like your body has this neuroadaptive ability to prioritize the thing that you force your attention into. You know, it's like someone that's had a stroke and you've cut out a section of their brain. Will they be able to see and hear again? Yeah, probably, if you train and do the right kind of exercises. Are they still going to be missing a chunk of their brain? Yes. So you haven't restored the brain, you've adapted around. And so it's like we keep doing this with the body. You know, we're like, oh, the low back's better. Well, great, but what about the rest of it? Is that also better? Like, you should be seeing universal improvement across your whole body.
Oh, Regan, it's so great listening to you. Mm. This idea as well about the fact that your father is a chiropractor and extremely advanced in his own way. And you, by very nature of being his son, have sat underneath that expertise for 30 odd years and are now starting to really redefine what it means to you and redefine what it means for your clients. And I love that kind of thing, because that can't be taught. You know, that's literally like multiple lifetimes of experience passing from one to the next and being improved upon. So if anyone's got a chance of, you know, breaking a little further than scratching the surface into this idea of harnessing the power of the creator, it'll be you. And I'm so excited to see the progress that you make in the future. One thing that struck me, Regan, we'll just wrap it up here.
I appreciate that.
Because we've hit the 60 minutes. No, it's my pleasure.
Yeah.
Is I wonder how you might include content in your future. So with a business like yours as a chiropractor, of course, the engine room of the business is the consulting, the hands-on. You sell an hour or you sell half an hour. But what you're doing every day is interesting to a very wide audience, and it wouldn't be difficult to either have a podcast or to create specific sets of content that you can then post online, and it reaches tons of people. And anyone that isn't creating content, I always encourage them to consider it, because opportunities come from it that you just would never expect. We're on a conversation, you know, on a podcast 48 hours or so after writing a newsletter about thinking about a wider horizon, and these things happen for a reason, right? Mm. So I would definitely, you know, if you need any help thinking it through or whatever, obviously reach out, but you'd be a great host, and it'd be interesting to see who you might have as a guest and the conversations you had. So I look forward to following along, and I hope you do go and build your Healers Healing Center. Is that right? Regan, final question, heal the healer. Is if people want to reach out and get in touch, what's the best way to find you?
The social medias is generally, I mean, other than out, you know, if the clinic's obviously always here, Byron Bay Chiropractic Center, and we have a obviously strong social media and web presence for that. My personal Instagram and website is currently being developed. Well, my personal Instagram is happening. The website is in development, along with because the book's pretty, like, it's finished, right? The book's finished. I just need to square off the closing chapter and get it all ready for publication. The online course, I think I kind of talked about it briefly there, or I may have got sidetracked. That happens a lot. The online course that will kind of, and that's going to be available to everyone, because I think it's important like, obviously I want to help practitioners grow and to kind of expand their own horizons and see and just create spaces where they can feel safe to question their own, you know, practices and things that they're doing. But the online course, the ability to look at posture and biotty and the body beyond just like your postures within normal ranges, like looking and being able to differentiate and gauge the overall function of your own body and the bodies of those around you is incredibly important. I'm in the process of creating this online course that essentially, like, all right, this is what you're going to do. You're going to set up the camera here. You're going to do this. And then this is what you're going to look for. And these are the really important markers. Because one of the craziest, like, and this is like, sorry to sidetrack you. I know we've been in the hour, but one of those like craziest things for me is that, like, you know, the data and research that we have, you know, I don't completely throw the baby away with the bathwater. The data that we have on the importance of posture is staggering. Like, it is in many cases the single most important determiner of long-term life outcomes. It's like your posture, and not from what we see looking in the mirror front on, it's the side on. How is that stacked? How is it opposing gravity? How effortlessly is it doing that? That is the one of the greatest and most accurate determiners of long-term life outcomes. And it's something that the vast majority of people and practitioners just either don't know how to look at, don't know how to
makes me think of the
observe,
yeah, the iPhone and adjudicate or the laptop shoulders. It's quite hard to see because you look at yourself in the mirror front on and you don't see, hence you have to go to a chiropractor.
Yeah, you don't see it. And it's like, but that's also like the beauty of it as well, in that, like, that's, you know, this is what we want to present to the world, right? And so, like, you know, yes, we get those iPhone shoulders, the slumped, the collapsed, the stressed, but just as dysfunctional as the person that can't do that, right? They've been spent so long with their shoulders pulled back, walking up straight, that they can't slouch. They can't express grief. They can't go into that sadness because their body physically won't allow them.
Really? Wow.
Just to drop that right at the end of the conversation.
No, well, that's almost like a kind of an opener for chapter two whenever we do that. We'll do one in person. That was a great suggestion you made. Well, Regan, thank you so much for your time tonight. It's been awesome learning with you.
Yeah, the body language.
And plenty of people out there will find this kind of stuff cool. So, yeah, really appreciate your time, Regan. Thank you.
Thank you, Jake. Pleasure.